Grab your beverages and turn up your interweb. Solving the world's problems 12 ounces at a time. It's Dudes and Beer. Well, hello everybody, and welcome to episode 242 of the Dudes and Beer podcast. I am Chris Jordan, your host. The Dudes and Beer podcast is now officially brought to you by PodcastCadet.com. PodcastCadet.com, everybody. If you are somebody that wants to start a podcast personally or for your business, stop on by. They have great one-on-one personalized consultation with industry professionals from branding and marketing to the technology behind it, distribution, everything. Stop on by PodcastCadet.com today and use the code DUDES20 for 20% off of your purchase. Today on the show, I am so happy to be getting back to some of our roots. For all the new listeners out there in the Poughkeepsie area, up there in the Hudson Valley, I just love saying Poughkeepsie. I know that it covers so much more, but I've always wanted to say Poughkeepsie. It's like saying Albuquerque, you know? So welcome to all of our listeners up there on WMLD in the Hudson Valley area. We're so excited to be talking back, getting back to some of our roots. Sorry for that stumble there. The Dudes and Beer podcast, just so you know, folks, is a conversation on humanity. We as a society, I think, have kind of lost our way. Whether it's politics, whether it's UFOs, whether it's it really doesn't matter. There is no topic that is technically verboten on Dudes and Beer. The only verboten thing on Dudes and Beer is how we discuss things, which means that there is no stupid idea. There is no stupid topic. At one point, believe it or not, everybody, the earth was flat. And if you said otherwise, you were burned at the stake, man. Like, literally, that was scientific fact. And unless you could prove otherwise through Aquinian proof, you were excommunicated from the church. You were burned at the stake by all knowledge that we knew until Magellan. The world was flat, man. The sun was also not the center of the solar system. The earth was. This was fact. And without discussion, they would still be fact. That's the idea here, is that discussion hurts. Discussion isn't always fun. Sometimes your form of thought, sometimes your paradigm is shifted. Sometimes you are changed by the discussion you have. The things you believe are challenged, and that's okay. That's all right. Without your beliefs being challenged, we don't grow. We don't grow as people. We don't grow as a society. So be willing to question, be willing to think outside the box. When the U.S. government and the FBI just puts out a memo and says, hey, everybody, conspiracy theory is now a form of domestic terrorism, that worries me, because that means if you don't think the way we do, you're a domestic terrorist. And imagine all those great thinkers out there, Copernicus and the like, who had to study in darkness, who had to literally study this science that we now accept as fact by night in secret, because other people were telling them that they should not be thinking that way, that thinking was wrong. And that's what we're going to be getting into tonight, folks, is a little bit of the roots of Dudes and Beer, going back to that discussion topic of politics. What makes America? The whole founding principle of this show is that our government, our country was founded in a bar. It was founded in the Green Dragon Tavern. That is where the revolution was planned. That is where mayors, politicians, pig farmers, everybody went to the public house. We all drank at the public house, folks. And that's where these discussions happened. We talked about religion, politics, economics, science. We disagreed. We passionately disagreed. But guess what? The next week, we all still came to the public house, man. We shared fence lines. When you needed food in the winter, I gave you food for so your family didn't die. When I needed wood, you gave me a cord so my family didn't, like, freeze. What happened to this? What happened is that we no longer talk about politics, religion, economics, science, UFOs, past life, new life, paranormal, what have you. We have closed minds, closed hearts instead. We choose to judge people by the color of tie they wear on TV instead of what's in their head. And that's what we do with politics in America. Unless it's red, unless it's blue, we give it no credence, none. And that's what we're going to be getting in tonight with our great and good guest, Daniel Roy Barron, unaffiliated third-party candidate right out of Austin, Texas, right here running for president. A lot of people would be like, why are you going to have some third-party guy on who isn't even like an independent candidate or, you know, doesn't say like, yeah, I'm Tea Party. You know why? Because if you're asking that question, you're the problem, man. You are actively the problem. If you want to know why I'm going to get, you know, you want to know why? Because he's man enough to get up and say, I'm going to run for president. That's why I'm giving him the time. So we're going to be getting into that. We're going to be getting into so much more. We're also going to be having Bob Dunsmore on to talk about the great mandate, how society should be thinking, how we should be trying to change the world for that seventh generation down the line. All that and more right after this from our in-house reporter, John Bowne.
A new poll from the YouGov Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation found that 7 in 10 American millennials would vote for a socialist. The poll also found that 50% of millennials and 51% of Generation Z have a somewhat or very unfavorable view of capitalism. So what does their future hold as these generations reach for a hell on earth filled with empty grocery store shelves?
So what the Congresswoman and I believe everybody in this room believe is that the time is now to change our national priorities.
One thing this moronic love affair with totalitarianism will inevitably foist upon these spoiled anti-American generations is the harvesting of their own organs. They will be chosen based on their beliefs, which will no longer be protected under totalitarianism. Similar to the plight of the peace-loving Buddhist Falun Gong in China, who are having their organs removed while they're alive because they won't accept atheism. The China Organ Harvest Research Center data from 2007 reveals that hospitals charged more than $65,000 for a kidney, $130,000 for a liver, and more than $150,000 for a lung or a heart. Researchers insist the pseudo-voluntary organ donation system in Asia has a turnover of 60,000 to 100,000 transplants annually. The practice is alleged to have started in the 1990s. It was initially targeted to forcibly remove the organs of prisoners on death row. China later claimed that death row prisoners consented to donate their organs to the state to redeem themselves for the crimes they had committed against the state, a practice China claimed to have stopped in January 2015.
Dr. Huang Jiefu has been facing heavy criticism in Australia. To his supporters, he's a pioneering liver transplant surgeon. To his detractors, he was responsible for running China's organ transplant system for more than a decade, a system that's relied almost exclusively on organs taken from executed prisoners. In a rare press briefing, Dr. Huang spoke to a small group of journalists to respond to his critics, saying Chinese prisoners must agree to have their organs harvested before they die.
Consent is not a presumed consent. Consent, written consent.
The explosion of organ transplant activities in China from 2000, together with reports of thousands of transplant tourists going to China to purchase organs, suggests a larger supply of organs than could be sourced from executed criminals alone, according to the tribunal. The scales of the Chinese transplant industry, together with other evidence, points to the possibility that China is involved in forced organ harvesting and selling for-profit organs from prisoners of conscience.
Falun Gong is a form of Chinese meditation and exercise with a spiritual underpinning. Since 1999, the Chinese government has cracked down on Falun Gong, charging it with being an unregistered religion and cult that aims to subvert the state.
The seven-person China Tribunal panel, which was initiated by the International Coalition to End Transplant Abuse in China, delivered its final findings in June.
For over a decade, the People's Republic of China has stood publicly accused of acts of cruelty and wickedness that matched the cruelty and wickedness of medieval torturers and executioners.
It stated with certainty that in China, forced organ harvesting from prisoners of conscience has been practiced for a substantial period of time.
So maybe that poll should be adjusted. Instead, we should just cut to the chase and say that 7 out of 10 American millennials will likely have their organs harvested while they're alive.
On average, 22 people die every day in the United States waiting for a transplant. The median wait time for a lung here is 4 months, a heart almost a year, and a kidney 2 years. Transplant tourists, understandably, have been drawn to other countries by promises of little to no wait.
But look on the bright side. U.S. tourism will skyrocket as the world healthcare system cashes in capitalist style, to acquire one of those freshly harvested organs from future American generations. John Bound reporting.
John Bound from Daily News Collective, always laying down the truth, always giving us a great angle on things. Amazing what's come out from China here in the last little bit, just to see the fact that there was organ harvesting going on. I just posted an article in the Dudes and Beer group the other day, I think it was yesterday actually, where they there was a Chinese company that was caught using live pigs for crash test dummies. And it was one of my friends was like, well, you know, it's a good analog. I was like, yeah, maybe a dead pig. I don't know too many people that are squirming and squealing going down the road. crazy stuff going on over there as we right here are preparing to swing into the full-on election season. Today we will be talking to independent, unaffiliated third-party candidate Daniel Roy Barron, right out of Austin, as well as Bob Dunsmore, to talk about the great mandate, to talk about Daniel's run for president out of Austin here, what his platform is, and the importance of third parties, independent voices, other than the extreme left and right that we are always hearing. To bring us into this, I have one more clip for us today, folks, and that is the indomitable Dwight D. Eisenhower from 1961. We talk about it here on the show all the time, of course, the quote, beware the industrialized military complex, but it goes a little bit deeper than that. And when you hear Dwight actively explain the reasons why this industrial military complex was built and why we have to safeguard ourselves. That's really the most important message. I mean, we can talk about dismantling it all day long, but we really need to know historically why we made it to begin with. And that tells us why it's here and what we can do to start getting rid of it to begin with. And that's a lot of what we'll be getting into tonight with the great mandate, things like that. But right now, I'd like for us to take the next couple of minutes and listen to the words of Dwight D. Eisenhower as he was leaving office in 1961.
Until the latest of our world conflicts, the United States had no armaments industry. American makers of plowshares could, with time and as required, make swords as well. But we can no longer risk emergency improvisation of national defense. We have been compelled to create a permanent armaments industry of vast proportions. Added to this, 3.5 million men and women are directly engaged in the defense establishment. Now, this conjunction of an immense military establishment and a large arms industry is new in the American experience. The total influence, economic, political, even spiritual, is felt in every city, every state house, every office of the federal government. We recognize the imperative need for this development, yet we must not fail to comprehend its grave implications. Our toil, resources, and livelihood are all involved. So is the very structure of our society. In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes. We should take nothing for granted. Only an alert and knowledgeable citizenry can compel the proper meshing of the huge industrial and military machinery of defense with our peaceful methods and goals, so that security and liberty may prosper together.
Amen, Dwight. It's hard to not kind of get chills, especially when you start hearing the almost apologetic nature in his voice. The pleading at the beginning of, please, people understand, this is not something that we wanted to do. This is not something that we, this is something that in order to achieve victory in this war, we had to do. And it was with great pain that we sacrificed these things. And this is where the concept for a lot of us folks, I don't attribute myself to any political party, gentlemen. Welcome to the broadcast, everybody. Daniel Roy Barron and Bob Dunsmore. Welcome, gentlemen. This is why I don't ascribe myself to any political party. I vote conscience. I vote heart. I don't care what color you're wearing on your tie. I don't care what party you belong to. I want to know you as a human being. I want to know where you are as a person, because these were the people that made the decision to, literally give some of our rights away. And what people don't understand is once you give those away, to get them back is almost impossible. And that's what Dwight D. Eisenhower understood all too well. And that's why he was saying, we've had to put this in place. But be careful, because he even knew as a general, as someone who was called into war during a time when we were still under a constitutional army, where the army was called forth. We didn't have a standing army. We weren't constitutionally supposed to have a standing army. But we do now, and they're encamped among us. And the posse comitatus, all kinds of stuff. It's wild. It's crazy. But it's literally something that we as a people have become normalized to. And we become more and more normalized to this way of thinking. Daniel, explain to our audience, because I've found it very interesting in our conversation yesterday, some of your personal background professionally and how it really applies to politics in so many different ways. So explain to the audience here who you are, where you come from, and why you're choosing to run as an independent, unaffiliated candidate.
Well, thank you for having me on the show today. It's been great. Well, my background, I'm born and raised from Knoxville, Tennessee, and I am Unitarian Universalist, progressive. I've always been about having the rights for women to have an abortion and for our civil liberties. And I'm really proud and honored to be so involved with Unitarian Universalism, which is very a cornerstone to a lot of advocacy groups and a lot of protests that we've seen over the years. And there were five presidents, actually, that were Unitarian. In the 60s, they merged together, Unitarian and Universalist. So it's a little different version of where that's all going. But I really have been going to church as much as I can, following a lot of the issues. My background is 20-plus years in quality assurance, technical writing, business analysis, and project management. I've worked for AT&T, Fortune 500 companies. I've worked for the Centers for Disease Control, which is as a contractor. And I've seen the full breadth of, and the full love of quality. That's my number one thing. And I, as a candidate, I'm running under the quality assurance, quality control. And if people research these, there's a lot of methodologies out there like Six Sigma, ISO 9000, management by objectives. There's really, we have great case studies, but my biggest argument is right now we have inspector generals, we have these house oversight committees, we'll hear these little blurbs of them interviewing these people, and we'll get that on C-SPAN and all these other media, but we don't have real quality. They're creating like these beautiful PowerPoint slides and these high glossy photo reports, but nobody's really doing anything. And I've embraced and I love the great mandate. I'm here with Bob Dunsmore, and I'm really working. This is a quality program. Right now we have 33 mandates that are about taking corporatocracy out of the United States, completely doing a surgery, doing a cut from that. And we'll go more into that here in a little bit, but it's how do we take corporatocracy out? How do we get back to we the people? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's just it, is that I think to take just a quick step back, like I was saying in the intro, Dudes and Beer is so entirely based on the original philosophic concept of this country, which is no idea is verboten, nothing is forbidden. Our founding fathers, if you go back and read the Federalist Papers, refer to America as the great experiment. This was the first time, despite any other government that's ever existed in the world, that this kind of government was going to exist. Yes, we were based on principles of ancient Rome, where there was a Senate and things like that, and you had representatives. But people forget the fact that we are a democratic republic. We are not a democracy. Democracy is not a form of government, people. It's a way that you vote. and I have a really good friend who is judge of elections in his county in Pennsylvania, and we were talking about how he just got his new paper voting machines, and he was so happy. And I was like, you know, man, why don't we just take it back to ancient Greece, what we based it on? You go in, you could even make it to where, like, whenever you register to vote, you know, you pay $5 and you get your bag of voting marbles, and they've got the state seal on them, black and white, just the way it used to be. And you go in, and there's a jar for Prop 1, there's a jar for Prop 2, there's a jar for this candidate, there's a jar for that one. And you pop in a black or a white marble, and you walk out. There are no more hanging chads. There is no hacking going on. like, there are so many simple ways that we could solve most of these solutions, but the real issue is that nobody's talking. Nobody wants to hear these voices, and that's precisely why I wanted to have you on. And I had numerous people whenever I posted that, you know, I was going to have you on, and they were like, oh, you know, what party? And I was like, well, he's an unattached independent candidate. Oh, you know, that's not going to do anything. And like I said in the intro, you are the problem. You're the issue right now.
Yeah, well, I'm also emphasizing the write-in, and even now we would have to change the laws now that the election is almost a year away, but only 8 states in the United States even honor the write-in. But I think there'd be no doubt if we were to gain enough traction that, you know, if 200 million people voted or 100 million people voted as a write-in, you know, then it would probably go to the Supreme Court or something like that. I mean, but it's still that notion that, you know, that write-ins, and you know, this country has never been a real country. I actually even had I've run for president in 2016. I had a hashtag, make the U.S. a country or make America. One of the reasons I'm really careful, because I lived in Brazil for 6 months, which is South America, I stopped using the word America or American. I refer to this place as USA, and Bob and I have been talking a lot about that. Part of me wants to use the word collaborative states of America, because it's about collaboration, because we're born, this is a country like the John Wayne and the Wild West, the guy on the horse who's all independent, or woman on the horse who's all independent. But then you have countries like China that are more united, but that's where they have minders on every block, watching everything if you can't have like a certain amount of kids. So I like the word collaboration because it's more in the middle. I would even rename the U.S. to be the collaborative states of America, because it's somewhere in the middle. We're not like cyborg like China, but we're not Sure. Totally all alone, independent.
Well, and it's, you know, I actually said not too long ago, I made a post where it was like, as America, as a producer, I have to tell you, we're far off brand. let's get it together in the next quarter, everybody. Let's bring it back to brand. And yeah, is it time for a rebrand? Because sure, whenever it was the United States of America, we were all united under one cause, under one banner, and that was to get out of the tyrannical boot of a king. We are no longer united on any front. I cannot think of a single political, spiritual, cultural, any front whatsoever. Where America is united, where people agree, where we aren't walking on eggshells as a society to have a conversation.
Well, my background has been since 2014. I've been a conservative talk show host on Voices of Global Freedom, and I still like that brand. It's called Face Triage now. It's about triaging faces, but it's also a native source news network. And I've had ambitions to grow this network to be in every country and be able to hire talk show hosts, actually have a budget and get the word out, give voice to the voiceless. But as I've traveled the country, my name is Backpack, actually. That's my nickname. And I became Backpack because I mostly lived, even today, I'm still mostly living out of a backpack. And I love what the symbol of that, because it's also a metaphorical backpack. What do we have in our backpack? What do we carry? What are the people, places, and events and adventures? What do we put in our backpack? But it's also backpack journalism, because I've been able to do a lot of my YouTube channels. You can find some of the episodes out there with my handheld camera. So we're working on amazing abilities to interview people. And I've interviewed Lieutenant General Flynn, Sheriff Arapaio. I've interviewed people unhoused. I don't like the word homeless, and I don't like the word illegal. No human is illegal. I like the word unhoused and the word undocumented. Those are the words that we should be using, I feel, that, you know, really explain people's situations. So I've the full spectrum of humanity, but my love and what I would say I've got a PhD in now is sociology. And my love is to, how do we all work together? What is humanity? What's our future? I have some really out of the box ideas, like banning robots should not be able to look like humans, like Sophia, that robot by Hanson Robotics. We reach a point where we start having more love for this robot that does everything we do. It doesn't need oxygen, doesn't need food, or all the basic essentials. So let's ban robots being able to look like humans, maybe look a little bit like them, but never fully full on, that we can't even tell the difference. My background is technology, and I feel like we need presidential candidates who know about programming. And, you know, we're behind the ball. Even in Bill Clinton, when he was president, he was the first one to bring email in, but that should have been in like 20 years before his presidency.
Yeah.
You know, we're behind the gap. So I'm also a vegan, and I recently went to Vipassana. It's a 10-day silent meditation retreat. And it's interesting for me as a talk show host that I would even go to experience that. You know, I was worried maybe I'll just
be quiet
away
for 10 days.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know,
been there.
And I really felt like I loved it, though. I really learned a lot, and I'm caring for it. The Vipassana actually takes things even beyond the Ten Commandments, where even insects, you don't harm anything, you know. So a big part of my platform would be move from the war economy into a peace economy. So how can we finally have peace on earth? And we can do this with the great mandate. And a lot of I've adopted that. I've already signed it. It's on a Move On campaign. And it talks about how do we disconnect, how do we conform surgery, how do we cut the corporatocracy, and how do we get to democracy? And that's huge.
Yeah, and that's a big part of what I wanted to talk about tonight, was getting past the corporatocracy of America. The fact that, like Dwight D. Eisenhower was saying, we need to beware companies coming in and doing this kind of stuff and the influence that they have on the process. We just spent millions of dollars over the last 4 years talking about how Russia may have had something to do with possibly interfering with something that really didn't change the numbers, but they may have had something to do with it. And at the same time, wait a minute, didn't it come out inside of that whole process that the Democrats paid a foreign country to come up with a dossier against the other guy? Like, you did the exact same thing. How was that not interfering in the process? They also, like, fully rigged their last Democratic primary to put Hillary over Bernie. Like, that was proved in a court of law. So you want to talk about, like, when the people involved in our government are actively rigging the government to maintain a form of control, and like Dwight said, an educated populace, people no longer remember, I don't think, what their actual rights are. I don't think they have a concept widely anymore of how we're supposed to interact with each other as independent, liberated people. The fact that we're supposed to be independently accountable for our actions. We aren't supposed to want government just to pass a law to keep something from happening. And the dangers behind that, the dangers behind saying, hey, government, solve all our problems. I'm no big fan of Ronald Reagan. I mean, I'm 44 years old, so he was the president I knew as I grew up. Knew a little bit about Mr. Peanut from Saturday Night Live mainly, but, but it was one of those, I'll never forget the words, you know, I'm from the government and I'm here to help. The 10 most frightening words you can hear. I'm from the government and I'm here to help. And that's absolutely true. I'm just one of those people that always thinks the more we do for ourselves, our representatives are supposed to be just that. They're supposed to be representing us. When we send our representative from the 13th district up to Washington to vote, he's supposed to vote the way we want. I don't care what you believe personally. I don't care what the people who gave you money for your campaign believe. We, your constituents who voted for you, said to do this and you're not. Go ahead, Bob. You were going to say something.
I was going to say that I think there is one thing that all of us here in the United States of America agree on. There's something that can pull us together. In my 50-some years of exploring the crisis we're in as a nation, I have come to understand that everyone agrees we are not a democracy. Everyone agrees that we, the people, should take control of our government. And so the great mandate establishes a vehicle to establish direct vote. Can you imagine right into Congress with your cell phones? All the technologies out there, nano encryption can guarantee that it won't be hacked. And you can watch on a big screen TV between both houses of Congress exactly how the nation voted instantaneously without time zones.
Are they going to actively be there to vote? Because that'd be great.
Yeah. I mean,
if they didn't just like postpone their voting,
the fact is that this is me, okay? I personally don't believe that we have the time to play the games that we're playing right now.
No.
Because they're fatal. These games are allowing an extinction period on our planet to continue for another electoral cycle with the Electoral College still in place and totally outdated system of government, when we could have direct vote, direct digital democracy, I like to call it, you know, 3D democracy with depth.
And, you know, it's interesting that you say that. Like I said earlier, my buddy is head of elections in his county and has tried to maintain things in a physical form as much as possible. He's like, hey, we will count chads all the day as long. The last thing I'm going to do is have some kind of system like what they had in Florida where an 11-year-old hacked into it in 15 minutes at a hacker convention in Vegas, you know?
I had two scientists from the Los Alamos National Laboratories. They call themselves a mad scientist because nothing happening up there is helping the people of America. and they assured me that the technology is out there for secure, unhackable elections and voting right into Congress. And where we could be polled instantaneously by our Congress, which in the great mandate has to be reconvened to support the majority vote. But we could
We could have polling, referendums, plebiscites immediately all across the country, and people would become involved and become participants in a democracy where they would become educated and knowledgeable about the issues and have a direct influence on how we solve this problem of an extinction of our planet.
That's a huge issue, too. I wanted to also address the 2005, the Supreme Court made a decision to actually make the corporation even more powerful. And, you know, the fact that we have corporations with this huge wealth and background, they're so incredibly powerful. But then we've lost posse comitatus. Now we see our police are more like paramilitary. They're running around with like, I'm not going to be surprised to see them having tanks or like.
They have them.
You know, and these you know, the whole thing, though, is like doing you know, we have to look at all the levels. I am a Black Lives Matter candidate, and I'm actually looking to do some more interviews and outreach to talk about white privilege. And I am a white guy, but, you know, there is a privilege there. I want to talk about a lot of the issues. And I really do support Bernie a lot, but and I consider myself progressive, but I would say even more progressive, like maybe from his background. But I want to really these are conversations that we need to have more of, like, where are we at? You know, what's the problem and the solution? But the Great Mandates talks about closing all the military bases, which I do support 100%.
Oh, yeah.
And how bring the troops home. But when we say this, we're talking about a huge restructuring of the economy. And I'm a huge fan of guaranteed jobs for everybody. And this is something like what we had to do during the Great Depression in the 1930s with President Franklin Roosevelt. It's like, we got to have some security that if somebody's in the military base in Germany, for example, how are they still going to be able to feed their family if suddenly I wanted to really, there's three major points that I want to get across. Everybody votes based on who they love, who they hate, and what jobs is involved with that. So one example would be if you're a law enforcement military intel, which I got to really know very well when I did Voices of Global Freedom. I was interviewing like Lieutenant Randy Sutton, 20-year veteran of the police, and Lieutenant General Flynn, the whole spectrum, law enforcement, military, intel. Of course you're going to vote for the jobs like building walls, moats, gates. You're going to be building all kinds of things that are about security, stricter laws, throwing people in prison. And I'm against the for-profit prison, too, and I'm against the military-industrial complex. But, you know, the whole thing, though, is then if you're a long-term, like, immigration lawyer, you're going to and your whole family is about helping immigrants, helping people get here, then you're going to vote more likely Democrat. You're going to be in favor of like programs that involve more loving things to help people who are undocumented, who are in our country. How do we help them? How do we take down walls? How do we bring, you know, raise the minimum wage in Mexico? How do we make Mexico great again? It's not about making the U.S. great. You know, why is our exchange rate? It's like 18 pesos. I was just in Mexico. 18 pesos for a dollar. You know, why is that? Why don't we work to have them have a livable wage? But the number one thing that I would say that I'm going for is create jobs with meaning. And when I use the word meaning, I mean most meaningful for the community, but also it works both ways. Both the employer and the employee are working together as meaning, you know, something meaningful. Creating jobs with meaning that people love to do, not that you're going to hit the snooze alarm 12 times and hate your life and go to this crappy job at a livable wage for whatever country you're at. So no matter where you are in the world, the ideal thing is, and I know we have sweatshops here and a lot of the MAGA gear, you know, like Make America Great Again gear for the Trump was actually made in sweatshops. I've actually seen them in LA. Indeed. You can just walk down the downtown and find them. They were made in sweatshops in China. What is a sweatshop? It's basically where you're making pennies. You're not making a livable wage. That's slave labor. You're probably living with 20 people in a room, and you're all, you know, you're just sleeping on the floor. Yep. And you're going to work, and we see that across the world. So these are, you know, create jobs with meaning that people love to do at a livable wage for whatever country that you're at. That's the number one thing that, if I were to say that, that's and quality with quality assurance.
And, you know, it's interesting, like you were saying, bringing up quality assurance. I think that's probably what we're missing more than anything. Like you said earlier, we have governmental oversight committees. We have all this kind of stuff. Normally, whenever you have a quality assurance company come in, that's like independent, you know? Right. And it's interesting because the corporatocracy folks just swings right back into this. Think about, and you can call it whatever care you want, Obamacare. I don't care. I care. all right. I'm on it. I use it. It's what I have to have. Number one, yes, people, you should have health insurance. What I don't agree with is being told that you have to have health insurance. Like, that's kind of a personal decision. And for a government to say you have to do that was hard enough, much less to say, hey, everybody, you have to do this, but that's not the one we're using. That's not the one that's for us, that y'all pay for, that's 100% free for us, where we get great health care and everything else. I'm here to tell you, everybody, when using that health care system, there is an doctor in Austin that you can go to have a baby. One choice. There is no choice in Austin for coverage if you're on the lower rungs of the system. If you're on the government-supplied healthcare system here in Austin, that's what you get. You get this doctor. That's it. So it's interesting to see that these people were brought in to help write the law that regulates their industry. And then what we are provided on the back end is I'm not going to say horribly substandard, but definitely not like the you can keep your doctor, you'll have great choices situation that should actually be considering that we have great doctors in this country. And it's interesting to me to have known that coming from a single mother, I went and saw my doctor every week because I had to have two allergy shots every week. And I know there were many weeks where she could not afford the $30 for allergy shots. And my doctor just said, bring your kid. He'll get his allergy to just bring your kid, Brenda. Just bring him. And the opportunities for that no longer exist, really. For a doctor to be able to reach out in that way, to be able to provide the care that they want to be able to provide. Their hands are tied. And it's because of these systems that we've put in place. It's because we've allowed corporation to sneak in the back door to legislation. I believe I'm on an active campaign to get every senator and congressperson a nice jacket, you know, like what they have in NASCAR. DuPont, Pfizer. Who'd you get money from your last election? Because the bigger it is, the more you know they spent. Who's on the back? Who's just the one big patch on the back that you got there? And once we get to a point of that, I think we can really start to open people's eyes. Once we get to the point of saying, hey, congressman, you know how we give the president 8 years to get something done or get out? Same with you. You got 8 years, man. Get it done or get out.
We don't have that time.
We don't have, like, it's ridiculous that we are paying people that have been in the same job. If you had, here's a question, as a quality control person. If I had the same job 30 years and nothing changed in my department, would I have my job?
Well, if it was
corporate America, yeah. Status quo, yeah. Maybe some downs here and there. We went up here and there, but like nothing in the culture changed. Nothing changed. We just stagnated. 'Cause like that's pretty much where we're at. Politically, we have gotten to a point where the incumbent just gets in. People do not understand that things start locally. You need to know your local politicians. That's what like directly impacts you. That's literally the ecosystem that you were living in. Yes, there's the whole world, but like this is the water you're drinking. So
I just want to make it clear I am for single payer and that we should have Medicare for all. I'm actually on the MAP program right now here in Austin, and I'm on food stamps. So I'll admit it.
That yeah.
I've had to do that. My story is actually very unique. My father died like 3 years ago. I'm honest with people. It was $130,000 at the time. My brother took control of it when I was in California for 2 years, and I had no contact with my family. And so he's doling out a little bit. I get like $510,000 a month.
Sure.
And so that's how I've been able to do all these things. And even running for president and doing talk shows and writing a book. I've got, it's called Looking Glass Shattered. It's all about shattering the looking glass. How do we shatter the looking glass, and how do we get back to what serves us and leave behind the old looking glass? And I'm actually rewriting that again. It'll be on Kindle Select. It's a very powerful title and a book. I put my life and soul. One of the issues I've had, though, and I've stayed in homeless shelters. I've struggled. If I ran out of money, you know, I had to sleep in a park and get run off by the police. I haven't been arrested. I have been thrown in a mental facility recently, which so I wouldn't be talking about running for president, though, if I had a felony or anything.
Yeah,
like that.
Absolutely.
But, you know, so I've really tasted a whole different version of the U.S. And even while I was making $80,000 to $120,000 a year doing these IT jobs, but then I call it cubicle commando sarcastically.
Yep.
You know, I go to work in my cubicle car, cubicle interstate, then I go to my cubicle job. You know, and I even said, why don't we just have our cubicles at work in the shape of a coffin? We die, we just fall into our cubicle.
Yep.
I
used to say for years that I wish I'd die behind the soundboard so the band could pick it all up once. Because I was always there hours beforehand setting up the whole sound system. And they just showed up and plugged in their instruments and played and left. And it's like, thanks for leaving me with all the gear to tear down, guys.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment that... The situation with Citizens United and giving corporations the title of people, of persons, has brought me to this point of realizing that what is running our government are not our representatives.
Nope.
So we've got to change our government. We, the people, from time to time, have to do this if our government no longer serves us.
Exactly.
And so I'm here today to declare the start of a peaceful revolution.
And that's exactly what Dudes and Beer is about. That's what we said, is it's a revolution of mind. It's a revolution of hearts, people.
Oh,
and we aren't advocating violence or anything like that. But what you have to do is you have to be willing to radically change the way you think.
In fact, we're condemning violence.
That's right. That's right. And it's the fact of trying to get back to a point of some common sense where you can have a conversation with your neighbor. Where you can have a conversation with your family members. Good God, man, we got families that aren't talking to each other anymore because of politics.
Tell me about it.
Because of politics, man. Like, that's Christmas. What are you going to do? Jack, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, Chris Hanukkah, Kwanzaa Dawn. I don't care. They all happen at the same time. You've ruined it. It's gone. From such a beautiful philosophic concept of being able to talk, to being a society where we are walking on eggshells, and to go back to the point that you were making earlier about going through the trials and tribulations of life. Yeah, like not many of our candidates have ever gone through the trials and tribulations of life. Most of them come from fairly well-to-do families, They've got, and it's interesting because even our founding fathers, most of them, were people who had that. Like, you didn't find a whole lot of Davy Crockett's in there. Like, Davy Crockett was one. He was a trapper and a hunter and stuff like that. Second grade education, but it was the fact that most of these people were lawyers, doctors, stuff like that. They were people who were active in their communities, who saw what was going on and had the time and means by which to go serve on their own. Many of them back in the days of our founding fathers did it out of pocket. They were not reimbursed by their community or anything like that. As a matter of fact, Benjamin Franklin petitioned the fact that no congressperson or houseperson should have a salary. None of them. Nobody should get paid for this service. This should be a service that we as citizens, we as free men, want to take part in this endeavor. that we want to be here for our fellow man and for our society, for our community.
This is what we must mandate.
Yeah.
I wanted to say I love the idea that you brought up about how important conversation has been, like with the Federalist Papers, with the Common Sense movement.
Absolutely.
In the bars and the taverns.
Yeah.
Where the public became pub.
Right? Yeah, exactly. The public house.
And I just had an image of a campfire, which I was talking with Daniel about earlier. The idea of sitting around a campfire, how important that has been for, 100,000 years?
Yeah.
To tell our stories and to either feed the fire or put it out.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, like... one of the two. One of the two. And it's wild to me to sit and to know, and we've got a pretty decent spread of generation going on here. I myself am probably the youngest at the table, but it's one of those that age doesn't matter.
I
have found more.
Thinking.
I've taught age 4 to 40 in my life, and technically the only thing I've seen different is that by age 40 you should know better than to pull people's hair. That's it. I have heard the stupidest questions come out of a 40-year-old's mouth, and the most profound things come out of a 4-year-old's mouth.
Yeah. Just look at our president.
The thing is, you've got to be open-minded and open of heart to have the conversation to begin with, and to be there and present in the moment. You can't just be waiting your turn to talk. You have to be actively listening. We have lost a point of empathy in our society. And that's what I wanted to get back with you about there, Daniel, when you were talking about some of the woes that you have experienced. We often see these people, especially in Austin right now, with everything that's going on. I have to say, I laud you personally for the fact that you made the announcement to the city that you would volunteer yourself as the city liaison to the homeless. And to the disenfranchised, that you would be the one to go out on behalf of the city and say, what do you need? What can we do to facilitate you? And that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, thank you. Actually, I sent an email to Mayor Adler and about being the unhoused liaison.
Yeah.
I want to change that. It's really important because homeless...
Unhoused, I'm sorry.
We make these assumptions that homeless people are like bad people and they're
going
to rob us. But
no.
I really want to express that I've always had in my blood, my DNA, De Oppresso Liber, freedom of the oppressed in Latin. That's been always like vibrating through me. So all these things I've gone through, like my brother taking the money without my permission, I've been angry, fighting with him. And from the year I was 2014 to 2016 doing Voices of Global Freedom, interviewing, and you know, my family should look at me and say, Chair, oh, you've been doing great things. We'll support you. We get behind you. I'm 51 years old. I've always been doing the best I can, my travels and learning. And, you know, this is my time to take. It was like a midlife because I was like, I just didn't want to die in the cubicle. So I was 42 at the time. I'm 51 now. I'm, you know, as I march into my 50s and look at, I don't want to have any regrets. I want to do, I've hiked to the top of Mount Katahdin. I've been to Brazil, met so many lovely people, you know, really concerned about my girlfriend, Alina, who was actually deported. And it's brought up a lot of things where I feel like everybody should have an Earth passport. We listened to an immigration lawyer who got bad advice and told just to go to Tijuana, walk back because she has a Hispanic look. I honestly feel that if she had a white face, like my face, then no problem, no problemo, but, or if she was from Germany. But Trump, actually, we learned later, passed legislation to make it really hard on Brazilians. But she went through a horrible thing. They threw her in handcuffs. She didn't take a shower for 3 days. They immediately deported, treat her like a criminal. And she's got, she had a visa to be, she was in Chicago years ago as a technical trainer. She's worked for Accenture. You know, great lady. We treated her so horribly. I felt ashamed, and you know, they threw in a camera. They had 7 cameras on her in the bathroom in this container prison. No sunlight, no air. She was actually treated worse than at least they get an hour at the you know top security prisons.
Here. Yeah, yeah.
But how we're treating people, and she's you know she smelled horribly, and they ripped her backpack. You know, and that whole she's still you know, and now she's really struggling in Brazil because she really needed to get a new life, get out of there. And so I've learned so many things that I feel like everybody should have an Earth passport now from all these things. And me going to see her and getting to see her family, she actually had an uncle who just had a heart attack. One of my things would be ban the GMOs, ban Monsanto, and Tulsi just Gabbard mentioned banning Roundup, and
yeah.
You know, get back to all natural. But the climate's in crisis. Guy McPherson, who's somebody I'm looking to interview on the show, he's actually saying that we have weeks or months, which is an alarmist. But I want to throw that out there. I know that it's such a profound. We've got to work on the climate, and I love the great mandate because it says. Okay, step out of the play. The climate's in crisis right now. You know, and all this greed, all this money, that's going to be on the tomb of humanity. It's going to say, it'll say clearly on the graveyard of, you know, as we look at over 7 billion in humanity, it's going to say, you know, yeah, we had great greed. We had great stock prices, but we're gone now, and the planet is.
Yeah.
It's not that life is actually very, very resilient. It's the ecosystems. We're losing all these ecosystems. I mean, the coral reefs, the plankton has like gone down just in the last 50 years by 50%.
Yep.
And that's, and these are not returning. It's not just life. So it's a desperate call. We've got to work on the climate. You know, there's a lot of issues we're trying to cover in this, we have an hour or so in this interview, but we can go on and on about a lot of different things.
We've technically got more than an hour. Okay. We've got an hour with our audience on WMLD up in the Hudson Valley, and we do have to sign off for them here in just a second. Go ahead, Bob. You had one thing to say before we signed off for that audience and continued on for our internet.
Thank you for that. I hadn't planned this, but because we've been referring to the Great Mandate, which is a huge game changer, I thought maybe your audience would like to know where they could go and read it.
Yeah, absolutely. Let them know where they can go find that.
That's a website I set up primarily for that, and it's called solutions.info. Real easy to remember, solutions.info, but
okay.
With a hyphen after the L.
All right, solutions.info is where everybody can go find that, solutions, hyphen after the L.
Yeah, like it, focusing on the sun,
yep,
right, is
yep.
Part of
Soul it. Soul oceans.
Yes, .info.
.info is where you can find and get your copy of... The Great Mandate. And we'll also make that available on the Dudes and Beer podcast as well. We'll make sure and put a link up in the episode post for that. To all of our audience in the Hudson Valley, take care. Thank you so much. Keep tuning in, all of you. Check us out. Check out the rest of the interview on dudesandbeer.com and HC Universal Network. For the rest of our audience, we will continue on with the conversation. And... like you were just saying, Daniel, for me, knowing that these issues are going on planetarily, ecologically, like I was saying before the show, it blows my mind. I work a lot of corporate AV, like 90%. That's what I'm doing on the road. 35, 40 weeks a year is working huge conferences.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. Large multi-million dollar conferences, medical. A couple of the big ones I work are petrochemical conferences. And every year I have the opportunity to sit inside this closed door meeting. Chatham House rules, nothing is allowed to leave the room. But I can talk a little generality. And when you have literally the heads of probably the 30 largest petrochemical companies in the world addressing the question of one-use plastics and what are we going to do? This is a horrible crisis. We need to stop this.
Agreed.
And the conversation is from them that we need to stop this. But the manufacturers will not spend 3 to 5 cents more for bubble pack to use a product that costs more money to make. And that just breaks my heart because there you have the people in charge. These are the people making the product, and the people just will not buy it. They want to make it. They want to put it out. People are just so stubborn, they aren't willing to spend the extra 2-3 cents per item to package it.
That's why we need a mandate to have that happen.
It's horribly disheartening to hear those things, to hear the fact that like these people are trying and their hands are tied. Their hands are tied, and it's not even the government that's tying their hands. It's companies. It's other companies that are saying, no, we want to keep doing this.
Well, right now in the oceans, there's a plastic the size of Texas. And I was just reading, in the salmon now, they're finding plastic within. You know, there's a lot of reasons really to become vegan if you go down this road.
50% of the sea turtles have plastic in their stomachs.
Oh, that's all the sea turtle coke. We need to educate them more on drug use and not doing that. Yeah. I'm just.
But what you could say to these corporations is like, what's on the tomb of humanity? You know, you have to have really powerful words. You know, this is our grave. You know, that we saved 5 cents on plastic. You know, but this is going to quicken our time to be dead and destroying Mother Earth. You know, there's such a, it's such a, you know, that. The alarm, I think that it really does have a lot of merit to bring voice to the alarmists. And, you know, they're proposing the Green New Deal, and there's a lot I like about it, but there's also tons of money to be made on the other side. Like Al Gore brought attention to the climate. We have to look at all these things through a microscope, though. And I've actually talked with other people who are just saying, some of the Green New Deal is really just people are going to make tons of money on that side too.
Well, and that's just it. My question has always been the fact of, should our champions be the ones paying carbon credits so they can keep using their private jet? Like, I love Al Gore, and I love a lot of what he exposed and brought out with, you know, the making of the movie many, many years ago, stuff like that. Say what you want politically, folks. The man had some good heart and intent doing it. But you would think after that, maybe you'd calm down on the private jet use a little bit and just quit pumping carbon credits out. You know, like his family made a crap ton of money off coal and still does, and just keeps paying carbon credit instead of finding some way to change that technology, putting that money back into finding a more efficable way to use the coal supplies that we have, something like that.
According to Howard Zinn, who I admire profoundly, admired, I still do, there's no way other than the people taking control in order to change that.
Yeah.
There's no other way.
Yeah, and precisely because otherwise we are leaving it up to their control.
Right.
And if we leave it up to their control, look at where we've gotten.
We've gotten to a profit before people.
Yep.
Profit before people economy.
Yeah.
The slogan of the great mandate is people before profit. Mm. I've worked in 20 countries, and in every single country, the U.S. was the main terrorist.
Yeah.
The U.S. was the main oppressor because we have put profit before the people, and all around the world, people are suffering tremendously from that fact.
Well, and to take that a step further and a step deeper in the conversation would be the fact that profit has come before politic.
The same idea, like, right?
Yeah, precisely. The concept of what we were talking about in our pre-interview yesterday, Daniel, where you're looking at the fact of every mainstream media debate that you see is sponsored by that broadcast company. So whatever corporation, be it Johnson & Johnson, Pfizer, whoever's given more money to that company in commercials, that's the way those debate questions are going to swing. So you've gotten to a point of where there is no open, honest debate because everybody has their agenda coming out through sponsorships,
except
things like that.
I'm really excited that that's not happening here.
Yeah.
I love this debate.
It's what it's supposed to be. It's what it's supposed to be about. And when you start subtracting this, when you start getting past the point of like I remember family laughing at me because I was a Ralph Nader supporter. I was a big Ralph Nader fan. And the one thing I kept pointing out, they'd be, oh, there's no hope. I'm like, look at those numbers. He's got a third of the popular vote. The man had a third. He was kept out of active debate.
Sure.
And there are clips. You can look it up, folks. Ralph Nader kept out of debate by security, and you will see the police like holding him out, saying, "You are not on the bill to debate tonight, sir. You are not a viable candidate."
Get ready, Daniel.
Yeah. Well, I love Ralph Nader. I would consider him. He's in the sphere of quality assurance. You know, he's why we have seatbelts in our cars. You know,
he's why we have curves in the road. Literally.
Yeah, I mean, Clark Howard is also a great guy from Atlanta. I've actually been to his book signings, and he's a consumer advocate. He even has if you live in it, you can actually call his hotline, I think, anywhere where you can just call him. He's done so many things for consumer advocacy. Yeah. That's real quality, but it's also saying that, in my experiences, working for the CDC and AT&T and different companies, they had QA, but we didn't have real QA. And I don't really like the word chief executive officer, because actually, if you study it, the military all went into our corporatocracy, corporation. Yep. They're basically, you lift the ideas of the military. Chief executive officer sounds like somebody got on a submarine, like he's my chief.
Yeah.
You know, that this is the grand poobah. But, you know, I like the idea, let's call everybody like human being safety. And so I love quality and like how to bring that into nonprofits, for profits, business, government, especially. But then, Deming is the father of modern day both artificial intelligence and quality assurance. That's who I studied when I got my degree from University of Tennessee and bachelor's in business administration logistics. And I got a computer science degree and associates from Pell City State. But he went to Japan in like the 1950s and 60s after. He tried to talk with some U.S. executives, but they didn't want anything to do with quality. And so modern-day Honda and Toyota stem from that. Everybody wants a Honda and Toyota. Wouldn't it be great if we had a government that was just as finely tuned, worried about process and procedures, and, you know, it's going to, like you said, take off the NASCAR jackets where all these people are wearing, you know, lobbyists, and, you know, remove that from government, do that surgery, do that complete cut. But the reason why I prefer the word safety even above quality assurance or quality control would be people are killing themselves in Japan in the name of quality.
Yep.
So we still have to look at the human factor. You know, what if someone is about to have a baby and they work for UPS and they're driving a truck? Should they be allotted that same amount of seconds to deliver that package from the truck to the door? That someone who isn't having a baby, you know, or, you know, how we've lost that human factoring. But I was talking about some really cojones, like legislation, like banning that robots should look like humans. Another area, you know, there's a lot of other areas where we can go too far with quality. Oh, one area that I would definitely look at is we should not allow automation of jobs, actually ban them. One of the guys who's also running, Andrew Yang, I've been following his campaign. He's all about the UBI, Universal Basic Income.
Sure.
We already have that. We already have, if you have a disability, but I think what's even more important actually is the modern monetary theory, and we can go more into that. That's actually the economic belief that we're not spending enough. That's Dr. Kimberly Kelton. We can put a link to that because there's progressives that are really for the modern monetary theory. It's actually saying we're not spending enough money. We can raise our D-plus infrastructure, create jobs for everybody. We've got tons of money. We're not spending enough. Everybody's worried about the balancing the deficit, and that's actually smoke and mirrors. So there's if you follow modern monetary theory, you know, we should be opening up the doors of spending and bringing in a lot more. And that brings a lot of the fear, because the first question is, you have these great programs. Okay, you've got free Medicare for everybody, great Medicare. You're going to open up the doors for all these, you know. Also, Bernie wants to get rid of the, you know, all the debt that students have, $40,000 in debt. On that particular issue, I want to say we should be looking at all debt. You know, if I had $40,000 debt from college, fortunately, I don't have that. But I also had $40,000 in debt because I started my company. We shouldn't just look at the debt of students. We open it all up. Like, how do we get rid of all debt? I don't think that it should be just specific to one thing. Okay, maybe that person regrets and they can't get a job. That's horrible. You go through that, you got $40,000 in debt. It's like your ball and chain. Well, but what about the person who had $40,000 debt from trying to start a company?
Exactly. Exactly. And how do you encourage those people to do it again? Just because you failed doesn't mean you won't be successful in the next endeavor. And I think a lot of that really comes down to And while we're fixing that, we also have to look to the next seven generations, right? So why have we defunded trade schools? Why have we defunded programs like auto shop, home ec? Like, we should be making things like nutrition a required class to graduate high school. If you don't know how to actively care for yourself when you graduate high school, how to balance a checkbook, how to know literally the difference between need and want.
Well, I take it to another level too, is that we should all have a primary nutritionist that we see. Just yeah. Right now we have a primary doctor, but that should be mandatory. But across the board, I guess my biggest message for quality would be we need to be proactive instead of reactive.
Yeah.
Everything is about kick the can down
exactly.
the road. And,
exactly.
Because there's more money to be made. There, yep. It's just patching up Band-Aids here and there. But we have permanent fixes to all these things. But the fundamental thing that I would run for is that if we tried to sell Snickers, Cheetos made in the U.S., if we got on an airplane and went to the European Union in Paris, they'd throw us in jail. They're not allowed us. If you look at the ingredients, they've been hiring teams of biochemists
yeah.
who get paid $100,000 a year. They keep adding, every 6 months, they keep changing the ingredients. I'm actually looking to do a documentary called Food as a Weapon. I have tons of content.
Ooh.
And so if you took a 1965 Snickers bar and compared it to a 2019, and one of my dear friends, actually, I travel with living out of his van. I've had a lot of these kinds of experiences just traveling with really interesting people. But he's on synthetic pills. He has like 30 of them. He opened it up to me. I was like, oh my God, because he was a veteran and he's getting VA benefits. So they'll give you tons of pills. He's just taking like 30 synthetic pills, but he's also eating his Snickers, Cheetos, Lay's, potato chips. These are nurturing. These are loving foods that we grew up, but they've been so branded.
Yeah.
But it's not the same thing. 1970s kids.
It's not sustenance.
In 2019, though, we didn't even know about the word organic in the 70s growing up as a kid. Everything was organic. Everything
exactly.
was like all natural.
Exactly.
Monsanto didn't exist. And
yeah.
I'm on a personal thing because my dad was a PhD biochemist and he did cancer research. I have his name was Paul Wigler. My original name is Wigler, and then I changed it to Barron because I was picked on in high school. Bullying is like a big thing, you know, for my background too. I took my grandmother's name, Barron, which was Barabon when she came to Ellis Island. They changed it to Barron. Yeah, so I'm of immigrants. My parents are from New York originally, so I kind of have this blend of New York and Tennessee. But I love the helping people come here and have better lives. So I've had to kind of breathe in all these different issues and like think about, and especially – I mean, there's so many things like we've lost 60 million Native Americans to all this encroachment. And yeah. this place was originally called Turtle Island, you know, the original Aboriginal. We're actually looking to go to the powwow tomorrow. They're having a big thing here in Austin, a big powwow. We're actually trying to insert more into the Native. I call my network called Native Source News Network, that we're all native to somewhere on this planet.
So much of the concept of democracy came from the Native American people. And I want to honor that tomorrow. I want to honor the fact that the seventh generation principle, that every decision made, consider whether or not you're going to harm your generation in the future or not.
That's right.
I would love to see an endorsement of the idea of becoming a democracy, which is what the great mandate is, a vehicle to that,
yeah.
with the engine being the people. I'd like to see that endorsed by the Native American community, because we're all original peoples and we all hunger for to be heard.
Yep.
And we use the talking stick, by the way. In fact, that's even in the mandate, that all the town councils and the regional councils that are established use the talking stick. We've used that in Española, New Mexico. We have an Española Valley Community Council where the talking stick just did miracles, because everyone was listened to with respect. And we were able to resolve what we wanted for our valley. So I just wanted to throw that in. The first mandate and the great mandate is that the U.S. government, that we the people demand of the U.S. government a declaration of a state of planetary crisis, and that we direct all of our resources, all, to saving this planet before, for example, creating CO2 on Mars. which we're spending trillions of dollars trying to do, to so we can populate Mars. I mean, come on, we need to look at the saving this planet right now.
Yeah.
So when you think of education, which you mentioned earlier, I'm saying all levels of education should be looking at what they want for the future and how to make it happen.
Yep.
A healed earth where the four elements are clean.
Whole people. I think that's what we have forgotten, be it politics, be it medicine, be it education. I come from a family of educators, so to see the state of education now and where it's come to, and the fact that it's become a hustle of the system to get money. That's all it is. Standardized tests come out so that districts can get money.
A couple of stories from Little Española, New Mexico. I don't know if you're aware, if you know that town, but that's the capital of the lowrider community, where you had kids that were like experts in hydraulics to make their cars jump and to redesign the cars. They closed the automotive department at the college right there in Española.
Yeah.
And they're training people how to make nuclear triggers for Los Alamos Laboratories.
And see, that's the thing, though, is that we're forgetting whole people. College is great. College is beautiful. We have a whole industry, though, that requires people that have to know how to turn a wrench. Even those non-humanoid-looking robots have to have somebody that knows how to program them. The robots ain't programming them. So we have to find new ways to educate where we can teach people to live via their passion, where we can get back to a point of, and I'm big on it here in my house. My son loves my tools. He's got his own tools. Those are yours. You want to play with the screwdriver? Here's your screwdriver. My son's 2.5. He's the only 2-year-old I know that can plug in a XLR cable, like for a microphone. I mean, that's a circle with 3 things. Like, that's some insane hand-eye coordination. But it's also the fact of, I'm teaching him to work with his hands. That may be something that he actively enjoys and loves. And I would never, ever rob my child of the opportunity to get to work with his hands, to put his hands in the dirt and plant a tree, to go out and do any of that, because that may very well be the seed of his vocation. And we've lost the concept of vocation and gone to the concept of a job. And a job is just what you do 9 to 5. A vocation is something that you define yourself by.
And that should be supported by public income, by public taxes.
Exactly.
And as part of the great mandate that you are to be helped to have the kind of work that you love.
That's it.
Whether it's an artist being paid, like during the New Deal of Roosevelt, there are thousands of artists being paid to paint murals.
But when you start removing arts programs, when you start, had people told me, and believe me, there were people my whole life, I spent 20 years in rock and roll doing stages and stuff like that, and I had more than one person, my mom, my dad, family members included, that were like, so whenever you're done with that, you're going to get a real job, right? I now get paid to travel the country and do basically what I was doing in high school tech theater to get an A.
Well, that's the fundamental divide between these two types of jobs. When I was saying before about the immigration family or the social work family, that they're more likely, you know, they've been the Democrat voters or in the Democrat Party. They've been that party. Then we have on the other side, we have the Republicans who are like law enforcement, military, intel, and they might have been generations of family members that were in that. So that's more based on fear than there's based on love. But how do we solve the bigger pictures? Because I've also been following Brazil, and Bolsonaro is very, very much like Trump. But the whole thing is like crime is like a huge issue. Like, how do we deal with crime? Fundamentally, it's about education, but we can funnel more money into social workers. Why don't we send, let's say, 1,000 social workers from the U.S. to Brazil or all around, or create more jobs, or even convert like half of the police to be social workers, that where people are afraid to talk to the cops now. They look scary. They look, and I'm afraid. I mean,
that's because drugs are still criminalized.
Yeah, that's a huge...
The mandate calls for decriminalization of all drugs.
Yeah, sure. I love that.
Because obviously it's a health issue, not a criminal one. And so you would remove the reason for crime. You eliminate it by providing a person what he needs or she needs to continue her addiction. We're all addicted to drugs. Right.
But
get that educational element in there.
Look at the, what was it, 8 years that we spent in prohibition in this country?
Right.
8 years in the 20s? We decided real quick that that wasn't the best thing for our country. But it was shortly after that that the FDA was created and that we started putting labels on drugs, labels on medications, things like that, and where we started the active campaign of criminalization of marijuana, which was done utterly and thoroughly through racist means, focusing on the Hispanic culture down here in Texas on the border, focusing on the black jazz culture, things like that. I mean, we could go on and on about it. It's amazing how, and one of my favorite guests we've had on, I need to contact him to have him back on. If you've never checked out Raul Diego of Deep City Chronicles, check him out. He is busy writing a great documentary right now, Ghost on the Water, which is all about the water issues going on with Nestle, things like that in our country. But wrote a great documentary, the unhinged truth about the drug war, and it goes back into the founding of America and how the opium trade became the slave trade, became the CIA drug trade. Like, all of these channels have continued on, and how even like what's going on actively in Venezuela right now is fully because of us and us just deciding to economically crush Venezuela when they said that they would not sell us oil. Things like that. And this is what we're talking about, folks, when we're talking about the corporatization of America, when we're talking about getting rid of the corporatocracy, the technocracy. It's about returning the power to us, getting these companies, these corporations out. Like, just it's weeding a garden. That's the only way I can think about it, is the way that my grandfather used to have to go through every year, pull up every single crop and till the earth.
I think that
to start anew again.
I think you would agree that we're not talking about destroying corporations.
No,
talking about allowing them to function, but with the stakeholders in control.
Yeah, I am a pure capitalist. I mean, don't get me wrong. I am of the mind that unadulterated pure capitalism is the best economy that there is, because it fosters competition, it fosters growth, it fosters everything. Unadulterated. Don't touch it, man. But at the same time, I mean, unadulterated communism is a beautiful thing, too. In groups beyond 30, it just doesn't work. Like, we've tried those social experiments so many times. And right now, it's kind of scary to see so many people... I'll just say it, falling into the trap of pure socialism, where it's like, wow, you know, some socialistic concepts are great, but to go pure socialism is right up there against pure communism. And man, that gets scary real quick whenever you're talking groups of, like I said, 50 or more. At that point, the inherent corruption of mankind takes over. Somebody wants to gain.
Well, I would say that I'm a capitalist as well, but it's all about buying and selling. But I also like that gravestone that of humanity, where we can't just keep buying and selling.
No.
It's like, you know, try to move to the alternate energy and a lot of things that are healing the environment.
That's what I'm saying, is that like when you hear these corporations, like I said, like saying we need to get rid of single use plastics, we just need to be done with them. How do we convince these other companies? Like, we're the ones that make it. But if we start making this other stuff, they're not going to use it, because we've been trying to sell them on this for years and they won't bite. How do we make them bite?
It's their best interest to do what we're talking about.
It's crazy. It's weird to see literally this stymie just happen. I sat not too long ago and a group of numerous companies. They had an economist from Harvard speaking to him about automation. And, you know, one of the people was like, well, we're concerned with these automated trucks taking jobs away from truck drivers. And he was like, see, here's the interesting thing. Do you think that your companies would be spending millions of dollars in the automation of their truck fleets if people were lining up to come drive the trucks? We'd love to give those jobs to people. Nobody's being told it's a viable job anymore. Nobody's being told that it's okay to go drive a truck, kid. We need you. You're part of the immeasurable infrastructure that we need. So how do we get back to the point of telling people, hey, man, you know how much an over-the-road truck driver makes? They make crazy money. You got to be willing to do the job. You got to, I tell people all the time, I could teach a cat to run AV. What I can't teach a cat to do is want to work.
You know, imagine a truck carrying all the batteries it needs for its electric engine to get from point A to B. It has a room back there for batteries.
Yeah.
Imagine if I were a kid, I'd love to maybe drive that truck.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's the kind of thing we're looking at.
That's just it. And you have to reinvigorate people to understand that, like I was saying earlier, I would like to ban. The only way I can see is somebody who worked in the media, both mainstream, sidestream. The only way that we can get back to a point where viable voices are heard equally, is to ban political ads. Twitter just did it. Twitter just said you cannot pay for a political ad. You can go on, you can go live, you can say whatever you want to your followers, stuff like that.
I can't pay for a political ad because I don't have the money.
You can't pay the $10 to boost your political ad. You can't put a political ad up. And I think that's a good thing. I think it would be great because I just worked the Texas Republican Caucus not too long ago. It was very interesting to see. Number one, podcasts have fully stepped into the realm. Finally, we acquired an equal slice of the pie as NPR and talk radio in budgets. And it's because media is now chasing our coattails. Their model is old. It's old. This conversation doesn't happen. It can't happen. The sponsors won't let it happen. I don't care about sponsors. I'll do my show with or without them. I've paid to do my show for 4 years. I'll keep paying for another 20 because I think the mission is important. I think getting this knowledge out to people is important. So I don't care if I have sponsors. Nobody's going to go pay to put their, without sponsors, you're paying to be on the radio. I know people that are radio hosts and they pay to be on the radio.
Well, that speaks to the federal jobs program, that it would be about jobs that people love to do. And even it could be 5 hours a day. Let's say somebody's doing a podcast, but somebody who's been living on the streets for a long time who hasn't had any structure or like a job or, you know, routine and really wants to get back. Actually, there's a big thing going on here in Austin that I really wanted to talk about, too. Right now, the governor of Texas is actually bringing in state troops to shut down Mayor Adler, who's very progressive, and I really salute him. He allowed people to pitch their tent under the interstates here in Austin. Now they're all being run out by the governor of Texas. So you see this huge conflict between what right does the governor have to do to tell what a mayor has to do? You know, like, and so we're seeing something huge. Actually, I think I was going to mention to Bob, maybe later we'll go. There's a group here in Austin called Housing Not Handcuffs. And actually, I met some of them when I was struggling recently. I needed help with like a bus pass or, you know, and they're out like giving out free bus passes and all these great things. They do a lot of great things for Austin. It's wonderful to hear these stories. We can go down the rabbit hole, my book, Alice in Wonderland, like through the looking glass, like how to shatter that away. We can talk about all the negative things, but we also need to rise up. There's some great groups out there. There's some awesome stories too.
To loop that back around, to go back to the concept of political ads. We were talking before the show about how just the brain in and of itself is thrives off of negative feedback. Like it steals things into us. When you touch fire, like I was saying, you will learn fire is hot 100 times faster than 100 people telling you fire is. Trust me, man, you don't want to get messed up with that. Until it happens, like, it's not steeled in your mind that that's a reality. Unfortunately, the media uses this. It uses us to keep our society off kilter. It uses us to basically stay at each other instead of focusing on the task at hand. It's definitely a distraction. If you were to ban political ads from media, no more radio, no more TV ads, no more ads online. You now level the... And my reasoning behind this would be, much like I said in the intro, when you say conspiracy theory is verboten because it's now a form of domestic terrorism, what about all those fear-based campaigns that you're running? This guy's going to take your guns away. This guy wants to keep your mom from being able to decide what old folks' home she can stay at. Vote for Daniel Barron. That's not an actual ad for Daniel Barron, everybody.
Not approved.
By the campaign of Daniel Barron. But you see, you can see what I'm getting at, though. This is every single political ad that does this. You are literally, when you're feeding off fear to exact your political goal, that is literally the Webster's Dictionary definition of terrorism.
Well, you
literally
just hit on the 1987, the fair. In this country, we used to have the
fairness doctrine.
And so President Reagan, the reason why he's called the father of fake news is that he not only did he really make the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, like invalid. Not only that, the Congress actually turned around and wanted to bring back the fairness doctrine, and he vetoed it.
Yep.
So it was like a double whammy. So then you can definitely say he's the father of fake news. Shortly after that, Limbaugh, and then we have modern day Hannity, and then Fox News.
Oh, that was definitely that the birth created of the political pundit.
Oh yeah,
as we know it.
There's tons of money to be made though. Like you say, of this, it's clickbait media too. As people click on it, it might as well be National Enquirer. It's the
same. It goes right down. I mean, just to go another tunnel to the left. 2012, we struck down the Smith-Montag, folks. That went away. We talk about it on this show all the time. That was the regulation that kept the federal government from disseminating propaganda through the news. So when you hear that the Smith-Montag was struck down, and then about 6 months later, the president is attempting to put in FCC regulators to assure that approved messages are going out through news stations, that's worrisome. When that same president, as he leaves office, says, you know what we need to do is fund an office of anti-propaganda propaganda.
Well, one of the there's really two sides of the U.S. That are very polar opposite. There's the ones where you have some money in your pocket, you show up to a town, you can be okay, stay in a hotel or a hostel, which I wanted to talk to you. I love hostels where I've lived with people from all over the world.
Sure.
20 people in a room, and I've had downloaded a tremendous amount of information from all that, but recently I was in Atlanta and I'm just eating my lunch on the sidewalk. I wasn't actually in this office building, but a police officer came out and said, no, you have to move. He might've been a security guard.
Just eating a sandwich, man.
Yeah, I'm just sitting there. I thought this was a free country, but it speaks to this. He told me I can go to the MARTA, which is the, communal area, like that's the subway in Atlanta. So I was able to go hang out there, and he actually physically like watched me to like walk across the street, make sure I was there. Like, this is not a democracy. This is not a free country, but it's also one of the things near and dear to me is the commons. What is the commons? It's our air, water, land, forest, desert. It's that we all have a fundamental human right to share that, and that it should be 100% clean. And that's why I love the Great Mandate, because we are in a climate crisis. We've got to get back to, this is all about sharing. And there's a phrase in the campaign too called Ubuntu, which is from Africa. It's a tribal thing where when the kids, they did a study of these kids and, sociology, that one kid didn't just run and get all the berries. They held hands and they ran and they shared the berries. It's about sharing. But that word sociology is in it. We talked about that a little bit before. Mm. Everybody loves sociology.
Socialism.
Everybody loves socialism too. Yeah. So the Republican and conservatives actually love it more than anybody. It's they're using the CIA propaganda kind of corporate media to make it look bad, but they love like corporate welfare and subsidies for the Waltons and for Jeff Bezos of Amazon who makes $9 billion a year, you know, so they're pumping that version of social. And not only that, the employees at Amazon and Walmarts are actually on welfare.
Yep.
So they're double dipping into welfare. They're forcing the employees to get welfare at the lowest level, but they're also taking advantage because, like, I'm glad you played Eisenhower. I wanted to speak to, we had a corporate tax rate around 70% when Eisenhower was president.
Yep.
And now it's somewhere around, I don't know, 20%, but a lot of it's gone offshore.
Close to it, yeah.
As well. So, you know, we've seen a huge shift in tremendous sociology, socialism. I mean, I meant to say, socialism.
Well, and, you know, I say it all the time, I'm no Trumper. No, but when it came time for his tax returns and all that, I was one of those people that was like, you know what? Good on him. Good for him. If you've got the money and the lawyers to be able to hustle that tax system, good. Good. That's what every other corporation in America does. Why are we on him about it? You know what we should do? Change the tax law. Amen. So that can't happen. Yep. We could sit here and complain about the man taking advantage all day long, but he has the lawyers and the money to be able to take advantage. Like, isn't that why you hire H&R Block so you can get more money on your return and figure out things you can write off? So until we change that corporate tax law to say, hey, Apple, you have to produce a certain amount here. You can no longer shelter your income offshore. You know, we could be able, because, at that point when Eisenhower was here, like he was saying, this industrial complex that was set up, that was here. That was here. We weren't outsourcing parts. We built our parts. We did all that here, which is interesting because even now there's a big push. There's been a huge corporate join-up in North Texas where they'll actively be mining and making rare earth minerals right here in America, which will change the way that products are made once again. We'll be able to get these rare earth minerals that we need to make our microchips, everything else. We won't have to outsource that to China to get the materials to make it. Maybe we can make it here.
Better quality control on it then.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Dude, that fire that you're looking at right now behind you folks, that happened from a means of quality control. I ordered two of these batteries, charged them up, unplugged them, went to San Antonio for a couple days, was home for a day. One of them just burst into flames. It was plugged into nothing, man. Plugged into nothing. But when you're talking about 10,000 of these rolling off the line in a day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
Mr. QA, Let's get into that for a minute. Can you assure quality on 10,000 of those a day?
Well, definitely. I mean, if we if we really had, you know, really tuned that up, you know.
Yeah.
But one of the things is in the Congress recently, they just passed a $1 trillion budget, and nobody even read it. There was a little blip about, was it Senator Ryan was saying how he didn't even read it, but he at least tried. But it's all in this legalese.
They're all. It was the same thing with the Health Care Act, with affordable health care. We had to pass it so that we could read it because it was too big. It was too big to read. I had there was one senator I think had like 4 or 5 interns chunked into chapters, and they couldn't finish it by the time it was ready. By the time it was time to vote. So when you're doing that, you know, like we were saying in our pre-interview yesterday, Daniel, when you're talking and the news is border, 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 what are we going to do about the tens of thousands of people pouring over our border? And people, I'm here to tell you, it's smooth 10 times the numbers that normally come over our border. So our facilities are only made to hold so many. Like, this is just a sheer infrastructure thing. Go see how long it takes to build an elementary school that 5,000 kids are walking around. That's 1.5 years. Do you think we can actively do that as tens of thousands are pouring over?
Let me say that.
We've got to do something. So what happened, Congress?
Having worked in Mexico and El Salvador, Costa Rica, actually every Central American country, I saw what was driving them north to look for work.
Yeah.
And that's the fact that their soils are dead.
Yeah.
They cannot regenerate.
They can't grow it.
Regenerate their seeds. Millions have left the land because we, Monsanto and other corporations, have destroyed their economies.
Yeah.
All the way to Bolivia. The USAID dumped shit food, excuse me the expression, a horrible food upon the people, transgenic GMO food, in a place where every Bolivian told me, no teníamos hambre. We weren't hungry.
Yeah.
We had quinoa, llamas.
Yeah. We've had what our people have had for thousands of years and survived off of healthfully and good and happily.
And so, but you know what resulted there in the Altiplano of Bolivia was that 1 million or 2 million people left their fields and moved into El Alto. So I saw it grow from 6,000 people to 2 million.
Yeah.
And just in my lifetime.
Yeah, and there's no way that you cannot put infrastructure in that fast.
Right.
You just can't.
So it's not about the walls, infrastructure. It's about how we as a country go back and help Mexicans.
Exactly.
Return to their land.
Like we were saying, what do we do to help Mexico?
So
what do we do to say, hey, Mexico, what can we do to make you better?
Right.
Well, we definitely need to.
Because you're here. You're with us.
Amen.
Yeah, definitely decriminalize drugs like they did in Portugal. Other countries, even Mexico's now considering it. That'll be leaps and bounds. But after all that I've been through, I really advocate and looking to do some documentaries. Actually, another thing I wanted to mention is a people's debate here in Austin with people who have lived unhoused, people who've really been broken down, who've come from all different minorities across the U.S. Give everybody a voice. Give the voice to the voiceless. And that's what I never forget that. But the whole thing about the borders and the walls, there's actually a really cool artwork. I spent a week in Tijuana, and I got some interviews. I was living actually at a hostel where I could literally see the border of San Diego, and I was in Tijuana. And it's such a huge – it sends a chill up my spine because it's such a huge contrast. You'll see people from the Mexico army going by in their truck, like 8 people in there. And it's suddenly, it's just like, it feels like the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. And I felt that way in my 6 months in Brazil and then living in the U.S. and the contrast. But I interviewed like the out of sight, out of mind. There's a huge thing of people getting deported who've been in the U.S. for 30 years. They don't even speak the language, but then they end up getting on drugs, or maybe they're living in the canals. There's actually, right where you go through the border, you can literally see people living homeless or unhoused, like right in the canals. You can see it, but you wouldn't even know that unless you had stayed there and kind of researched it. And I met a wonderful lady, Danica. I've got some interviews with her on the channel. My hat's off to her because she risks her life. She goes in the canals, tries to help people. She's such a humanitarian. I mean, she's a real superhero. That's actually a theme of my life, is that it's not about Batman, Superman, Ice, whatever, man. It's about look out for your local superheroes. Look at these humanitarian groups. Look at the people that are doing some unbelievable things for humanity, you know, for helping all of us. But so they just built an art thing called the Teeter Totter, which it runs through the wall in San Diego and Tijuana, and it's kids from either side can
play with each other.
And so, you know, you go to these borders and you kind of study them. I stayed in a hostel in Arizona, and I met a couple people. One person was actually getting a PhD like in borders, and then another guy from Canada. They would just go to a border and just sit there and ponder and think. Why is one person born on this other side? Why is somebody born in the U.S. and somebody born in Mexico? And when you look at everything, like, I love Dr. Seuss, and he was a humanitarian. He said the Sneetches had, that was one of his cartoons, some Sneetches had a little tattoo and the others didn't. And then they felt all these things. And that's why, even though, we're inundated with labels, and I'm just not a fan. Like, people ask me, what's your name? It's like, I don't care, what my name, sometimes Backpack Daniel, Dan. I had somebody else I'm looking to have on the show. Mutual friend now, Mark Landau, has done a lot. He has a book about the new American evolution. Looking to have him on again, too. Bob just met up with him. It was great in Santa Fe. But, yeah, it's how do we get, Dr. Seuss was always talking about, from a humanitarian thing. It's like, why do I need a little tattoo or whatever on my belly? And then the other people who don't have the belly, and then they get jealous of the ones who either have a tattoo or not.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense, but I love his messages that he got across in his cartoons about how do we get back to just that fundamental, what is a human being? Is a, you know, we have all these terms, Jewish, Catholic, we have all these labels, we have
how about Republican, human, man?
Yeah,
how human. About just people? People. Yeah. It's, go ahead, Bob.
I have a question. I think that there are a lot of people out there listening to this right now, I hope, that would love to ask a question or something. Is there a way that we could set up where we could have call-ins?
On future episodes, we can definitely do one that's live on air and have that option.
Or meet up somewhere?
Yeah, I don't know. I do live. We do live episodes out on location, all kinds of stuff regularly. So, we can make that happen.
Maybe find
absolutely
a room to... conference place or whatever. I mean,
yeah, maybe, most definitely.
Maybe we'll have thousands of people.
Do our own town hall, even.
Oh, I'd love that.
That's a conversation.
I would love.
You know,
that.
That's a real conversation.
I've done
what do
about
we need?
Eight town halls, and I what love it as long as a talking stick is observed.
You know? Well, exactly, yeah. And it's the fact of
I think, brought a talking stick.
Well, I've actually been reaching out to other candidates that are like unaffiliated, write-in, third-party, like Vermin Supreme. He's has a huge following. I actually interviewed him in 2014. I was actually, people can find out some of the episodes with Kyler Davenport. I went by Roy Dan Barron at the time. And, you know, as I said, I've had many names over the years. But Vermin has a very good message. He's like, give everybody a pony, you know. And but he's very sarcastic, you know. But he has a huge love and following if you... check out his work. I'm looking to interview him and also John Ogle, who's been a libertarian. He actually said they're meeting here in Austin. He said that my ideas about quality could actually take off there. And
absolutely, you know, so. Man. Like, dude, no, we need quality control in this country so bad. So bad. Like I said, I mean, we literally need a branding company to come in, look at our original mission statement and get us back on track. That we have a mission statement. We really do. It's called the Declaration of Independence. This was our mission statement, people. The Bill of Rights. It's our mission statement. Well, this is what we should be striving for.
Well, wouldn't you agree that the finest quality control is a democracy?
Oh, yeah. No, most definitely. A proper... but like I said, I think we have to kind of re-educate people. I think people have lost the fact that... we are a republic, and the important thing about a republic is that we are in charge, the public, at the end. The republic is the fact that, like, this dude is going to go redo what we already did. Plain and simple. We said do this. We all conglomerately got together at a town hall and said, hey, representative, go do this. Now go represent that. That's all you're supposed to be doing. Our democracy is a form of voting, but when we forget the fact that we're a republic, that we're the ones that hold the power over them, they hold no power that we do not give them, people. None, none,
that's
none.
What it should be.
Take it back. Take your power back. That's all I can say. Like, go out, be someone like Daniel Roy here, who is at the very least, I don't care if he makes it or not, at the very least, he's willing to stand up and say, hey, America, we need to do something different. We need to look at something different. And God bless anybody steps up like you are.
My hat's off to people like Chris Hedges and Greg Palast and democracynow.org. This is like real media. If you really want to know, you know, we're responsible for causing horrible things, like Bob said, to South America. It's emitting, we've got polluted rivers in El Salvador, Brazil. The water smelled horrible right next to Alina's aunt's place. It was horrific. And, you know, like this, but this is all of our land. This is all of our places. And it's our common area that we share. But, you know, it's just looking at quality and like how to, you know, the people in El Salvador aren't protesting. Why? Because they'll end up floating dead in the river. They'll get killed, you know. And these were U.S. companies that came here. I mean, Bob told me this, and I've got to get the story out. They're not following the EPA regulations about environment when they go to El Salvador or other countries. They just trash it. So it's admitting that it's the U.S. causing these problems. We're not hearing this from any of the other, even Bernie. This is actually a little more, I just feel so passionate about it. I feel like in some ways I'm a samurai. I've already lived my life. I've just got to do this. But, you know, there's always, you know, supposedly we're a free country. We can do these podcasts, talk shows. But then, you know, I feel like I've got to do something. Yeah, at least for now. I do have to tell this story. There was a fun one of the guys I met, because now you can really approach anybody, especially it's really cool with podcasts. You can have amazing guests on. But there was a guy who was actually became very famous from our water rights. It was the No DAPL movement where they were blocking the pipeline in South Dakota.
Yep.
And he ended up doing a TED Talk. But I tried to approach him to do an interview with him, but he said, no, I've just had a baby. So he's worried about his family, and I totally get that. And the, you know, that whole walking that path of being an activist advocate, but you know, you're putting your name out there, and people are gonna, you know, there's just a feeling though of like, got to do something, you know. And I have to say, Brazil alone, I was talking with Alina about that, is like the number one place for activists to like die. You know, they don't mess around there.
No, no, they don't. And that's just it. Like, people don't realize. I say it all the time. We are so entirely blessed in this country. So few countries have the freedom to unabashedly protest the way that we do, to unabashedly take a sign out and let people know, to unabashedly go out and buy a .com and a microphone and start telling people what's on your mind. And what you believe.
I feel very blessed that I can do what I'm doing. And I just appreciate the fact that I lived long enough to have the internet and to have you and the social media. The Arab Spring occurred because of one person getting kicked off the street. You know, in that case, it was that he was trying to sell some vegetables, not eat them. but you know, the power, the potential of our actually bringing about a new American revolution. I like to call it the rebirth of the Americas.
Absolutely.
It could happen overnight. And I'm inviting people to come on, check out the great mandate at solutions.info, support Daniel Barron's candidacy, where he has adopted the great mandate as his platform.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a beautiful concept, people. When we do return to a point of conversation, when we do return to a point of empathy for each other, for humanity, for each other as humanity, when we stop looking at each other as that guy, or like Daniel was saying earlier with labels, that whenever you hear it, immediately put something into your head.
Can I tell you a little story?
Go ahead.
I lived in Bolivia during the ascension of Evo Morales to the presidency, the first indigenous president since the conquest. There was a huge epiphany for me in my life to be present during his investiture. But what happened there was a huge discrepancy between the people and the richest people. And 50 corporations, including Petrobras, the Brazilian oil company, wanting to prevent Evo Morales' election and threatening to pull out. All 50 threatened to pull out of the country. Well, it turns out that Evo Morales said, as soon as I'm elected, we'll do an audit, and whatever money they've invested in our country will return. Well, the audit was done within a few weeks of his election and inauguration. And they found that the government of Bolivia had paid for all the infrastructure for these corporations to come in and extract minerals. And so I saw within a few months the people in a democracy with universal health care, I got treated for nothing. A country where the nationalization of resources resulted in Bolivia now having billions of dollars in surplus in their budget. I could just go on and on about the beauty of their facing up to corporations to bring about a democratic revolution of Bolivia, is what they called it. The governor of Cochabamba, who was Evo Morales' spokesperson, you can hear him talking about the difficulty of setting up a democracy because you're absolutely clear what you do not want.
That's right.
But you don't know how to move into what we do want. And it's an educational process which requires the involvement of the people, which is what we hope will happen, you know, where people will go to town meetings and stand up and vote. And he pointed out that before the Democratic Revolution of Bolivia, there was one thing that the neoliberal economic order had created worldwide, and that was a lack of discussion, the lack of dialogue. He called it a void. But as soon as the people started to get involved again, it was like the dudes in bars. It just came alive.
Exactly. And when it's interesting because right here behind this curtain is my wife's podcast station. She does a podcast about improv comedy. And I was trying to express the fact of good conversation is like improv comedy. When there's a real conversation going on, when we're actively listening, we aren't waiting our turn to talk.
That's true.
We're actively listening. We're all part of the game. If it's brainstorming.
That's why.
And that's what we're doing. That's what we're doing as a society. That's what we're doing here is we're actively brainstorming. And if you're going to put out an idea and this guy goes, "Hey man, that's stupid."
Oh yeah.
You're never going to contribute again.
Yeah.
You're going to sit there in silence. Well,
one more quick thing. Sorry. I did a documentary on the Bolivian Democratic Revolution, and Rafael Puente, the governor of Cochabamba, is the main person. You've got to see that, and so I want people to know that it's on YouTube, a movie that I helped to produce because I was so impressed with the Democratic Revolution there, and I knew it inspired me to be right here today and say we can do it.
Yeah.
And that's on YouTube, and it's called Bolivia Beyond Belief.
All right, fantastic. Yeah, and we'll definitely link that into the episode post.
And Bob's an author too. He wrote a book as well.
Which book? Shamelessly plug it.
Well, yeah, I have to say that I wrote it for my family, and then my family felt that it should be published. And the reason why I wrote it for the family was that I was invited to work in El Salvador just 2 years after the end of the CIA-directed war.
Yep.
And so people like me coming into work in communities, they were getting knocked off left and right.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm thinking, hey.
By us.
Yes. Right. Oh, yeah.
By the CIA-funded people, folks.
Yep. From helicopters.
Yeah.
Massacres. And so I was afraid I might not survive, but I did want to go with my wife in El Salvador. We lived there 7 years. Fortunately, both my wife and I looked at each other when we flew across the border. When we were done, we went, wow, we made it.
That happened.
So the book is about what I had learned, what the most important lessons were in my life, which in some cases have been rather profound. For my family. And I finally got it published through iUniverse, so that's available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. It's called I Am.
Okay.
I love that, I Am, because that speaks to like the Celtic, the original ways to own your own power.
But that's it.
It's emphasizing both for women and men. A huge part of this platform that I would have for candidacy is matriarchal women's rights. And I love that the Great Mandate is saying it's 50% women, 50% men. I believe that I would take the National Council on Integrity as an incredible quality assurance, quality control, that it continues on, that if we really had really great quality, people would give faith again. If they had verifiable things, like in the country Sweden, I learned from a hostel where I had a friend from Sweden, they actually have really good transparency laws that we don't have here, where you can check out what politicians are doing. I wanted to insert a story about going to Brazil. I wanted to get the yellow fever shot, and I went to one of the places here, and it was like $400. I didn't even think I had $400 to get the yellow fever before I got on the airplane to Brazil. When I got to Brazil, Alina and I went to a clinic there, and I got it 100% free, and I had a U.S. passport.
Yep.
I didn't pay a dime, you know, so I was kind of like, you know, in some ways maybe putting myself at risk to show up in a country that has a yellow fever. And we did spend time in the rural areas, and, you know, from the main city that, you know, it's a lot more, especially when you go to the Amazon. But I'm really, that's a powerful story. The fact that, why do I have to spend friggin' $400? Not only that, They say somewhere is around only 50% of people in the U.S. even own a passport, or even huge numbers of people have never left. Part of this jobs program and how do we get rid of racism as a fundamental thing is to make it give people money to travel. Maybe it's 5 hours a week instead of 40 hours a week or something. I have this idea of one of my beautiful documentary ideas is take somebody who's only lived in the same small town, only knows like the 10 people that, you know, they probably know from birth to like however many years, 80 or so, let them travel and stay in hostels all over the world, film a documentary of like the before and the after. You know, yeah. We need some fundamental thing. There's some horrible divides going on with, we've got to get rid of the white supremacy and we've got to really celebrate diversity. And these are the cornerstones. Yep. The minority rights. And one of the things too, in I've actually interviewed several people from Kurdistan and Assyria in the Middle East. We need to carve out a region where it's their own country. It's completely separate. It's autonomous. Both Kurdistan and Assyria and other minorities too, that are just always on the run, always, why don't we create an area that's a buffer area where, but it's 100% their democracy too. It's about, I love, actually I have a dear friend who I went to her, kickoff for artivism. Her name is Jill Love Revolution. I recommend the audience go check out what she's doing. She's actually in Catalonia now protesting for a free and separate Catalonia. So just like we mentioned Arab Spring, I think it was a huge disappointment. We had huge opportunity in 2011 that it would ignite in all these countries. And we look at, you know, even in the UK, you know, Ireland should be 100% its own country. Even I would argue that the part in the south of Ireland is not a free, they're still being dominated by the UK. They're still not purely free. So let's start a movement now, a peaceful revolution. The Great Mandate is meant for the entire world. It's an expression. It's a start. It's not written in stone. Any of the 33 mandates can be changed. They can be updated. They can be deleted. The idea is that this is just a starting point. This is like a
Springboard. Yeah, it's a springboard upon which to build a better society.
And there's just one mandate that's not that can't be changed, and that would be that we create a direct democracy. That's where it all starts. Yeah. Then we can play around with all the rest.
Yeah.
But that one, I just want people to know and to reassert what you said. Once we establish direct vote, once we establish a linkage between all the town councils in the country with a quality and assurance council called the Council for National Integrity, then we can consider all the details about the other 32 demands.
Yeah.
I've also been calling for a constitutional convention, but for the people that would be an update since 1776.
That's tough to convince people of.
Oh.
Myself, I've been more a proponent of let's build a nice like three rail ranch style fence bordering Texas, and then one night we'll just annex Mexico and turn it into a stucco wall and just become Texaco. And Mexico and Texas will be cool with each other again and just go like, America, you're nuts, bro.
Well, they're saying that right now. I was in Mexico like, a few weeks ago, and they refer to our president as a clown.
Oh, yeah.
Well, people forget.
Payaso.
You know, Texas, we should actually be calling this place Tejas. You know, it wasn't that long ago. It was Tejas, you know.
I think that's what I was telling you in our pre-interview, Daniel, is I think people, I mean, number one, we're passionate. Passionate America, more than any other country in the world. When you travel, the one thing you hear is that, oh, we are robust. We're loud. We're proud.
We have the machinery for change.
And
as Leonard Cohen put it.
Well, and the thing is, we're very young. And I think that's what kind of causes a lot of the world to look at us funky is, you know, you sure are uppity just for being here 200-something years, man. Like, these other countries have gotten to where they are after some of them thousands of years, some of them not necessarily getting anywhere after thousands of years, you know, still very much, but that's also the culture in which they live. And that's what we have to understand, the society, the sociology. We do have to understand that, George Washington said years ago that we would have issues in Syria. This was George Washington that said, we cannot expect them to have or respect the same kind of government that we have. Because their culture does not operate the same way. And we need to understand that. We need to understand that not every culture our method is going to work for. It's a great concept, but...
I was just in Hawaii, and I saw what our culture has done to a country that would not consider itself a democratic. It was a kingship or queenship. But I saw the damage done by imposing a system that wasn't part of their culture.
Yeah, and you've got to be careful with that.
You mentioned 60 million Native American people.
Yeah, I've heard estimates around 60 million. And we're excited to go to the powwow and try to connect.
Yeah.
I've had a really calling. I'll tell the audience that one of the hopes that we have, there are some methodologies to eliminate racism through these DMT ceremonies. I recently did ayahuasca, Bufu Alvarez, and Combo, which was really powerful, a ceremony in Cancun. But as I was talking about, I really stripped all my looking glass, and I guess it was part of my journey. I really had a calling to try that along with Vipassana, a lot of these healing modalities. But when I got back to Atlanta, I started chanting like, which sounds very like Native American. And I feel this huge synergy and this this passion that, you know, as I strip through all these layers and I destroy words like mine, they, theirs, ours, all these words that were programmed. Like when we're a baby, we don't know any of these things. We're actually totally the fool, the joker, and the jester card in the tarot deck. And then we get to the world card. When you do these types of things or you travel the world, you don't fully master Spanish and you meet up with people and you're like, oh yeah, burn this poison frog in my arm. Go ahead. It's just you do these things because it's like you want to have a sense of adventure, risk. I didn't want to just be that cubicle guy and live the conventional life. And that's what my family came down hard on me. They're like, what are you doing? And we're not going to support this because you're not taking a green, yellow pill, a synthetic. I tell people I'm also a mental health advocate because I used to take that and I was so-called declared bipolar when I was like 16. And I was on these meds for up till into my 40s. And I've been able to get off all that stuff since then. And I want to speak that there's other modalities we have, whatever can work for people like cannabis for pain relief or reflexology, like Bob's introduced me to that. We're actually going to do a session later to work on this pain or like just healthy eating. I was eating horribly. I was eating like the Atkins diet and I was drinking tons of coffee. And no wonder I was like declared bipolar. We're all bipolar.
Would you like some more coffee?
I'm probably going to get something to eat pretty soon. Yeah.
Wouldn't be the first time I've been accused of being a bad influence. As we do wrap things up, tell everybody once again, just the one thing real quick, Bob, that the Great Mandate can do for America. What can the Great Mandate do for America and mankind?
The Great Mandate is... the vehicle. I'm celebrating it already happening because I understand that's the secret.
It is.
It's not to ask for something. We're not asking anybody.
You treat it as though it exists.
Yes, and we're not asking permission.
Mm-mm.
We're not trying to get permission to...
I'm not even going to ask forgiveness.
There you go. You know,
it's got to be done.
For a vehicle... to establish a direct democracy. And that the Great Mandate is the most comprehensive one out there that was just signed. It's been signed by the 13-year president of Habitat for Humanity.
Yeah.
It's been signed by our nation's Mahatma, David Hartzell, who was with the blacks and with Martin Luther King, and his wife, Janet. It's been signed by a dear doctor friend of mine who understands that as a doctor, he wants to stop bleeding, the number one thing.
Yeah.
And he sees a world bleeding. The fact that people have begun to understand that this is the vehicle to bring us into democracy with some beautiful checks and balances that you'll see when you read the mandate at solutions.info with that hyphen after the L. There's a link right there at solutions.info, which will take you to the Move On site where you sign the Move On campaign, the Great Mandate. And so by establishing a form of a vehicle with town councils and regional councils linked up where we're transferring information and sending it to a council for national integrity, which we will vote on as a nation to have elders that we trust as a transitional council, then we can actually create a government that will not only pledge allegiance to the Constitution and to the flag, but to the majority vote of the people. And so once we've done that, then we can look at all these other issues, all these other thousands of petitions and nonprofits' desires, right, yeah, that the corporate structure is laughing at because they, yep, don't need to hear it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, because it's unfortunately, we've made the corporations people. And now they have needs.
I haven't.
I didn't vote on that.
No.
So with that being said, Daniel, what are the three things you think you would be able to contribute if you were elected as president?
Well, when I got back from Cancun and I stripped my looking glass, I started chanting naked in the woods, doing a ceremony for crying about Mother Earth and like trying to fix this mess. I was actually cleaning up a river and it was just filled with trash and plastic. And I actually got arrested, held against my will by 8 cops. And I even questioned the cops. It's like, don't you have something big going on? Don't you have like a robbery? I said that to their face. I was giving them a hard time. One of the guys actually said, why was I even here? Like he really felt bad.
Why are you here?
And I felt like I was Gandhi because they wrapped me in a sheet and I looked on the police cruiser and I was like, the reflection came back was like Gandhi. So, yeah. And they actually put this Thorazine. I don't even know what all the chemicals are. Knocked me out. And then I started chanting again in the hospital. They knocked me out. I was actually practicing freedom of religion. And if I was in India or other countries and you're doing that, it's like, it's okay. And even the original people, like, you know, 300 years ago. I'm trying to say is like, we don't have really a freedom. We don't have posse comitatus anymore, which guaranteed that local police would be the number one thing. We have to look sincerely at trust busting these corporations, taking it another level, but bring back small businesses and create a new regulation group that makes them more like a co-op, protects them. Actually, there's a gentleman in San Francisco I wanted to interview who has, he's doing where he goes to Thailand. And if you're a farmer and you have one crop because of natural disaster, they all swoop in and help you. They, you know, it's Ubuntu. It's holding hands. We're going to help you out. It's not just, oh, you're going to end up homeless unhoused on the streets. You know, you're going to get kicked to the curb. De oppresso libre, or freedom of the oppressed. I put the pot in POTUS. I believe in the legalization at federal and all levels for THC. And I'm against the big pharmacy. We heard all the things about the opiates. The thing is to take down all the pictures in the White House, which we renamed to the People's House. I don't like the word White House, like People's House. That's what it should be called. Take down all the pictures in Congress. Take down all the pictures in the Supreme Court. Take every picture down, and the only pictures that should be allowed are our children, pictures of our children, and pictures of Mother Earth, and that's it. So, you know, it's staring you right in the face, and you're thinking about it every time. You're not thinking about, oh, I'm going to make $100,000 at this next thing that, you know, get up on the podium. And it's about people's debate. How do we get, you know, Obama, it was like $1 billion to get him elected, and I don't even know how much it was for when Hillary and Trump. I ran in 2016. I've learned a lot from that. You know, just the people thinking that this is a Ronald McDonald, it's a joke campaign, but that actually teaches you. You learn the most when you put these ideas out, these big ideas. And I'm very transparent. I tell people about my whole history of being on meds at one time, being off them, my struggles with my family. So I've kind of like shattered all these levels of from the legal systems, the medical. You know, banning all the fake foods that would be illegal in the European Union. So,
I'll vote for you.
Oh, thanks.
Well, and you know, what's interesting is that in the last many years, we saw. I want to say, was it Ontario that had the mayor that was like literally caught on camera like smoking crack.
Oh yeah.
You know, and was like, I smoked some crack last week. Buddy of mine had some crack. We smoked it.
In Portugal,
crickets.
You can do anything in front of a police officer.
Oh, sure.
Say, gee, you want to know what the effect is going to be.
Yeah.
And,
well,
what's
interesting, though, the point I'm trying to make is that he was not unseated.
Oh, I see.
Like, still a beloved mayor. Mm. He was a mayor that whenever he ran, he was like, here's my phone number. You got a problem, call me. And it was his phone number. Like, it was his home phone number. Here's the thing. You got a hole in front of your house in the street? Call me. We'll get it fixed.
I could like, give you my phone that's, number.
Nobody's getting my phone number.
I'll give you mine.
Yeah, but, we both have put I'll put it out, 323-496-7649. Yeah,
there you have it.
Call me, and we want to hear from you.
Repeat it again.
323-496-7649. It's facetriage at gmail.com. The idea is, like, we already have Facebook, but it's taking it to another level, like triaging people. And author of Looking Glass Shattered, that'll soon be on Kindle. It's a book that I've been working on 9 years. I mean, it's a
nice,
incredible compilation of stories and adventures, and trying to actually have that into a screenplay, because this backpack person is just kind of like the symbol of, like, this guy who's depressed, who's like making good money, but he's you know, it seems like he has everything, but he needs to go on a vision quest. And I've used that very clearly, going back to the native original ways that we should all be doing a vision quest.
Yeah.
And one of the cures for a lot of the PTSD and trauma is actually just to travel, you know, just the you show up to a new place, you meet, you learn about things, and just the love of, like, cultures and the backgrounds, and just endless stories and interviewing people. It's just amazing. I would hope that everybody can get a passport, that we raise that every 100 up to 100%. It's actually expensive to get a passport. It's $110 to get a passport, but we need some programs that, you know, here's a free passport, and we're going to, you know, you can go to Africa, or you go to Brazil, and you can learn about, you learn a new language, learn a culture, you can help the community. Let's cure. We have two choices. We can keep doing this military option, or we can actually put all the money. I'm saying, let's spend all the money on social workers and the creative, the artists. Who really gives identity? It's not the Starbucks. It's not the KFCs. The identity, the real identity, is our poets, it's our authors, it's our creative people, it's our people.
It's our cultural, cultural identity.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So when we go down that path, salute them. And when we merge together both universal basic income and the jobs program, we could pay people to do what they really love to do. Like, 99% of podcasters don't make a dime. I haven't really made much. I made a little bit off advertising from, like, Blog Talk Radio when I've done that, but, you know, just $20 here and there. But if we had a really good jobs program, we pay podcasters and they could free up their time to do, like, really cool stuff instead of having to work at like McDonald's or a slave labor job. And the other thing would be, like, get rid of the automation. Like, you go to grocery stores, there's a personalization. I do have to tell this one other story. When I got back to the US, I was really shocked. When I didn't actually even meet a human being. They scanned my passport. It's a totally electronic now. And there's, like, this robot thing. And then I had to look. I kind of looked down. It took a picture of me. And then I just walked through. And that's something that should not be automated. That should have a human being. We need I want to call – I just came up with the new slug line, like, legislation with cojones. We need some people that have some strength to push through to say, no, we're not going to just automate everything.
Yep.
Some jobs have to be human beings working. We need some strong leaders who aren't based on just making a money from the corporations.
That's right.
If anyone wants to know what cojones means, they can call my phone number. I want to share that because – I'm supporting you, Daniel, and I know you're supporting the concept of a democratic future for the country, and so I'm okay with sharing my number, and it's 505-423-2468, and if you prefer to send an email to the heartmindalliance@gmail.com. The Heart Mind Alliance is a group of friends from the different countries that I worked in. I worked in 20 different countries in community development. What we found out, is this okay? Do I have time to share a couple?
Sure.
What we found out in El Salvador, working at a community level, was the solution for the number one cause of infant mortality. I'll ask you, do you know what the number one cause of infant mortality is in the world?
Cholera.
Contaminated water. Yeah. But from what's contaminating the water are deep pit latrines.
Yep.
So in El Salvador, we came up with a way of making a shallow pit latrine that could be moved on skids. And so that's actually been adopted by the Peace Corps, by the way. I also, in Bolivia, found out how to reforest the world. Because the number one cause of deforestation in the world is the gathering of cooking fuel to feed your family
yep.
from trees. where if and it's the only fuel in the world that is not subsidized. You could your gasoline, your electric, your nuclear, all of it's subsidized, but the most essential fuel in the world is for feeding your family. It is not subsidized. So if governments could get cooking fuel to people, they've over and over again, I had people say, hey, if I got cooking fuel, I'd go save my forest. I'd go reforest. I'd be involved in a community effort to reforest. Because in eastern Bolivia, for example, they're flooded out every year.
Yep.
And cholera becomes a huge problem. So we found solutions that were getting up onto the internet through the HeartMind Alliance, and it is going up onto the platform of Northern New Mexico College.
Oh, great.
Which has decided to be the global center for online instruction on community-based technologies.
Great. And that is fantastic. I'd love to have both of you gentlemen back on to talk more about HeartMind Alliance and Great Mandate, Bob, as well as your candidacy and other things that you're working on, Daniel.
I'm really proud to be a Unitarian Universalist, and I happen to get this. I just want to emphasize that the goal, and I'm a huge lover of that since the 1970s growing up in the Unitarian Church. The goal is a world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all, respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are part, and direct experience of that transcending mystery and wonder affirmed in all cultures, which moves us to renewal of the spirit and an openness to the forces which create and uphold life, wisdom from the world's religions inspiring us in our ethical and spiritual life. There's so many of the teachings on here that I've just come to love, and I've really enjoyed going. I went to the Wildflower Unitarian last Sunday. It was such a beautiful service about opening up conversations. When you walk in there, similar to the Baha'i too, where you see all the symbols of all the world's religions, and you see how do we come together, in this time of division and this Trump era that we're kind of, I shake my head like, how did that even happen? But, once we have really good quality, we won't see like worldwide wrestlers necessarily being our leaders, leading us, where the seventh generation is to infinity, that seventh generation term from originally the indigenous means is like that it's lasting forever, that we look at respecting Mother Earth, respecting humanity, respecting each other, reaching out, not just calling the cops on everybody, trying to, there was actually I just came to mind that case. This happened up in Fort Worth where a cop ended up shooting somebody in her house on a welfare check. That's multiple reasons. Yeah. Number one is, why did the guy call the cops? Why didn't he just go over and see the neighbor, like check on her? Why did he call? And then it speaks to like the cops are just shooting everybody and we're all incredibly frightened. I had to get down on the ground because I didn't want to get shot and crawl to the handcuffs that were waiting on me, having to be there on the front lines and seeing this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But I salute, the idea is that the greatest champions, I'd love to see museums in Washington, D.C., based on my journeys in San Francisco. I spent a lot of time based on the beatnik generation, the freedom fighters, people like my inspiration, George Carlin, the comedian, people like Jack Kerouac, who traveled right after World War II, and there wasn't a lot of money, and he was doing something counterculture, the subculture, like Richard Pryor. I love a lot of the Richard Pryor is like one of the great, he's talking about things that are opposite of the culture. How do we get past... These are people that should have museums for in their name, like a counterculture museum in D.C. as important. Because when you see the system and you see that it's broken, it's our freedom fighters. I mean, we salute like Cesar Chavez and Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, who believes in a revolution of values. We do need, I agree 1,000% with Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. We need a revolution of values.
Yeah.
We desperately need that. And we can look to our people that saw that these systems are broken. They're the real freedom fighters. It's the people that probably you're not going to hear about on corporate media.
Yep. And that's just it. That's why we're having you on, Daniel, is so that people can hear what you have to say. People can hear this unabridged voice that we so often do not get exposed to on mainstream media. So thank you so much for coming, taking the time to talk with our audience, to share your message, to share the teachings of the Great Mandate. as well as you, Bob, for coming in to do the same.
Thank you for taking the time, yes, you know, and the energy.
Absolutely. And you're both invited back on. I'd love to have you back on, especially as things keep on moving through the election cycle. We'd love to keep talking with you about different things that are going on, what's being focused on in the media, and what we should really be looking at, Daniel. While you were online checking all of that out, folks, please do make sure to stop on by the Dudes and Beer podcast. That is where you can find all the episodes. That's where you can find all the content. That's where you can find the knowledge vault. You want things like this. You want things like the Great Mandate. You want declassified government documents and programs, things that they do while we are asleep at night. Stop on by dudesandbeer.com/knowledge, and you can get all of those as downloadable PDFs today. While you're online checking all that out, please do make sure to check out the great work of our parent network, HCUniversalNetwork.com. Please do remember, support your Dudes and Beer podcast. Come by, like us on Facebook, subscribe on YouTube, everywhere. Also, make sure to remember we are brought to you by Audible. If you're a fan of books like me and knowledge and just don't have time to turn the page, go by audibletrial.com/dudesandbeer for your 30 free days. Take care, everybody. Remember, if you can't be good, be good at it. Bye-bye.
Dudes and Beer app for Android and iDevices, available on Google Play and iTunes markets. For more episodes, content, and information, visit us online at dudesandbeer.com. You can also find our episodes on Breach.tv, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, SoundCloud, iTunes, YouTube, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. Dudes and Beer is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more about our sponsors and other podcasts on this network, visit HCUniversalNetwork.com. Thanks for listening, everybody, and until next time, drink responsibly.